Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Maybe when you write a national bestseller, you'll get your own sports show. Until then, this is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Parker's favorite song.
It is. Going to be joined by Florida State guard Xavier Rattan-Mays. The bottom of the hour, along with Ray Rattle, columnist for CSN Bay Area. Lots of basketball talk ahead in the Jeff Blair Show. Right up to Hockey Central at noon. But before we delve into that, Blue Jays position players, everybody on the field today, first formal day of workouts, first official day of workouts, first day of full workouts, however the hell you describe it. So far, so good. Nobody's been hurt. Nobody stepped in a sprinkler head. This was the case yesterday when Michael Saunders stepped in a sprinkler head and did in his knee. Kevin Barker of Baseball Central, he's seen his share of spring training injuries. He's seen his share of first full days of workouts, all that good stuff. He's seen his share of spring training, and now we've got him in the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Mr. Barker.
So I can't relate to that, but
what's the weirdest injury you've had?
I've never had one. I can honestly say in 16 years of playing, I've had nagging things like, you know, running too fast down the first baseline and maybe tweaked a little hamstring or
running too fast down the first baseline.
I've never, okay. You know, I jokingly say I ran too fast down the first baseline, okay. Which, you know, that's a ha ha joke, but you know, I was fortunate enough never to miss a game because I was hurt, and I'm very proud of that.
The first full day, what will this day be like? For players, the first full day of workouts. What goes through your mind?
For me, I can tell you, I was very anxious. I was, because most of the time I was going there to make a team. I wasn't going there to, you know, it's always fun to see guys you haven't seen for, you know, 5 or 6 months, or, you know, get to introduce yourself to new coaches and just be, you know, invited into a new organization, a new team, and like I said, it was different for me because I was driving the spring training to make a team, and it's different for a lot of players. You know, established players are going there for different reasons. They're going there to get ready for a season. Me, I was playing winter ball up until, you know, if I went to the Caribbean World Series, I was playing it up until a couple of 2 or 3 weeks before spring training, so I could go right to spring training, and I was red hot, and I was facing live pitching, and I was ahead of the game already. So, you know, it was mainly different strokes for different folks. But like I said, I was going there to make a team, and it was a little tougher for me than it was for most. But again, it's fun. It's baseball. It's, you know, you get to smell the grass, and you get to smell the pine tar, and it's just, you know, it's a fun day for everybody.
Hey, Kevin, what did you make of Saunders' injury yesterday, and more importantly, what the Jays have to do now? You know, people it's not so much that they're down their opening day left fielder. I don't want to minimize that, but the fact of the matter is what they're really missing is a left-handed bat. And, Kevin, to me, that almost makes Deonner Navarro more valuable to this team.
Yeah, it's huge. Deonner Navarro, I know the last time I came on your show, I said something about that John Gibbons needs to work on his lineup. Now it's more important than ever when you're missing one of your pieces that basically you were counting on at the bottom of your lineup. Now you need to mix some in the bottom of your lineup in the front of your lineup so you can hide some pieces in the bottom of that lineup, because they're going to have to fill in now left field. I think you're looking down the line. You got Andy Dierks. He's hurt now. What's he going to do? Kevin Pillar obviously was going to be there. Now he may be more of a starting role against left-handers. You can, You know, you can mix in Chris Dickerson, which a guy that I played with, Chris Dickerson, when I was in Louisville, Kentucky with the Reds. He was a great center fielder. He's got a great arm. He's a big guy. He can hit some home runs. He's fast. He can steal you some bases. He could be another leadoff guy at the bottom of your lineup, maybe hit him ninth. He can be that turnover guy. You know, I've always said last year on our show that it's not good to platoon, but all of a sudden in left field, to me, that's the best way to go because you got young guys fighting for one spot. You got more than one guy there, three or four guys. You know, you call them in the office, you say, here's the deal. I'm going to go with the guy that's the hottest. We're going to go with you until you can show us you can't do it anymore, and then I'm going to go with somebody else. That way they know up front, they know what they have to do, and it makes it more fun. It makes it more competitive for these guys, and they realize if I'm going to play, I'm going to have to perform, and that's the way it should be in baseball.
In conversation with Kevin Barker of Baseball Central on the Jeff Blair Show. The initial reaction from Alex Anthopoulos to the injury was, well, I'm going to make some calls. I've been making some calls, in fact. I'm going to make some calls, but initially at least we're going to take a look at what we have in camp before we go and bring bring somebody else in, which to me makes a lot of sense. And I wanted to ask you, Kevin, have you been in a situation where you've been in a camp and you're a guy, as you said, you had to go there every year and fight for a job, where you were in camp, a guy got hurt, the team went out and brought somebody else in right away? Because to me, that kind of defeats the purpose of spring training. When you get an injury and when you have an injury to a regular early in spring training, see what you have in camp, because you may only
100%
need...
100% sure. Well, you know, I think that's why you bring 40 to 45 or 50 guys.
Right.
I don't know how many exactly the number they brought to spring training, but that's why they bring a lot of different guys, so in case something like this to happen. Now, I'm sure if a Jose Reyes or a Edwin Encarnacion, this was to happen to one of these guys, or a Jose Bautista, that's a little bit different. Then you're going to go out because that's a main piece of your lineup. That's one of your main guys, one of your main leaders. You're going to see Alex Anthopoulos being a little bit more assertive in going out and doing some things he normally wouldn't do this early in spring training. But it's like you said, there. You know, it's a Michael Saunders was that guy that you didn't know what you were going to get. He's going to be your left fielder. He's fast. He can steal you some bases. He's going to play some great defense. But with the bat, you didn't know what you were going to get. Now they have four guys that they can put in there and see if they can do, you know, what a Michael Saunders could do. And, you know, they're going to play it by ear. I don't think it's one of those things that's going to make or break a whole season. Bottom line, it gets down, as well as you know, it gets down to pitching.
Mm-hmm.
What are those five guys going to do and those seven or eight guys in that bullpen going to do? That's going to win them games, and that's going to get them ultimately to where they need to be, which is the playoffs. If those guys go, the rest of the team's going to go. So, you know, this is fun to talk about, and it's, oh, woe is us. Basically, it gets down to your starting pitching and your bullpen.
Kevin, speaking of pitching, the Blue Jays have signed Johan Santana to a minor league contract. He's expected to report on Saturday. You know, it's a low risk. Hell, it's a no risk signing, right? If it works out, then you've got a left-handed arm with a bit of a, or you've got a left-handed pitcher with a bit of a pedigree. With considerable pedigree and maybe a guy that can help you early out of the gate. How would you see Johan Santana fitting in here? And is there a shot if he's healthy, if he shows that he's healthy? Do you think that there's a shot that maybe the Blue Jays look at him and in the bullpen as much as a rotation?
How many times could you get a two-time Cy Young Award winner to be your fifth starter? How many teams can say they've had that? Now, obviously, he's had some problems with his arm, but if he comes to camp and he shows that he can throw upper 80s, low 90s, and throw the Nintendo changeup, which is what he's famous for. When I was playing, you know, thank goodness I was left-handed and never had to face him. But the book on him was get him often early, because if you get to the changeup, you're done. And if he can come to spring training and show the Jays and shows Alex Anthopoulos that he can throw a little bit harder to make the changeup look that much better, hey, it's only going to be good for the younger guys on this team, because all of a sudden now you have another coach on your team and he's in your staff. He's pitching every 5 days. He can help a Daniel Norris. He can help an Aaron Sanchez. He can help a Marcus Stroman, which, you know, Marcus Stroman's going to need help. It's that second time through. People know who Marcus Stroman are. So, to me, if this guy can come in and show you that he can throw strikes, he throws a little bit harder, and he can throw his changeup, it's a plus. Now, is that going to happen? You know, that's sort of a flip of a coin. It could or it could not happen. But if it does, that would be awesome. That's exciting. And like I said, how many times can you have a two-time Cy Young Award winner as your fifth starter? That would be great for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, and I know that I exchanged emails last night with the scout who saw Santana pitch, saw him pitch last year and saw him this year, and said the same thing you did. The whole issue with him is, can his velocity be enough that changeup is effective as it needs to be?
Sure,
that'll be the whole question.
Guys that throw a lot of changeups,
yeah,
they have to throw harder. They have to, you know, run. I'm not saying he has to throw 95, which he's not going to do that anymore, but if he can even run it up there to 88, 89, mm-hmm. and the difference is 20 miles an hour, and he's throwing that thing 68, 69 miles an hour, it's a huge difference. He can get guys out, and if he can go 15 starts, win you 7 or 8 of that, just the presence of him being in that fifth start, and what it can do also, it can back a Daniel Norris up, not put so much pressure on him. You can put him in the bullpen. You can put him in spots he can succeed and ultimately be better for you down the road, which is, you know, the ultimate goal.
Hey, Kevin, what's going to be the key early in spring training for these guys as they try to get ready to make sure they don't get hurt, to make sure they don't overdo it? You know, you talked about how you played winter ball and you'd come in and you'd be good to go because you'd come off, and anybody who's seen winter ball will tell you the competition is really intense. You've come off that intense competition. You've come off that high of competing. So you're just kind of rolling right into camp. But what's going to be the key to guys to staying healthy early?
Well, I think most of these guys, you look in your lineup, they're all veterans. You know, Reyes, I could go down the line here, Encarnacion, Batista, Donaldson, Martin. All of these guys know how to do it in spring training. And John Gibbons is going to know, hey, if I don't have these guys, I'm not going to win. So he's going to put these guys in spots. I'm sure they're not going to shag balls in the outfield like they were 2 days ago, the five guys that I just mentioned. So, you know, I'm sure John Gibbons is going to work them in on the right. He's going to put them in the right spots not to get hurt. But, again, it's the player. It's up to the player to know, I've done this much in the off season. I know what I can do and how hard I can push myself, when I can push myself, how many swings I can take on an everyday basis to get ready for April when the bell rings, I'm ready to go. So, like I said, to me it was totally different. I had to show up swinging as hard as I can, back-legging balls, showing, mm-hmm. you know, the manager I could hit the ball 500 feet. You know, most of these guys are established, don't have to do that. So, you know, like I said, it's up to the player. The players should know they've been playing long enough, and just go out and do what you need to do to get ready for April.
What are established players trying to do, especially in early batting practice? Because I've often wondered that. What are guys trying to do in early batting practice? The first time you step in the cage against live pitching.
The old saying is that most pitchers are way ahead of hitters, but nowadays, I know I played with Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista in winter ball. They usually play the last month of winter ball just mm-hmm. so they can get ready and be a little bit more advanced than everybody else. But, you know, it's just you get your feet wet. You get in, you see live pitching. You see, because spring training is a lot of younger guys. Like I said, veteran guys know how to you know, just to flob it in there, get used to hitting corners. Younger guys are throwing as hard as they can throw. They're grunting. They're throwing their slider as hard as they can. It's just good to get in the box and see those guys and hopefully not get hit by one, because speaking from experience, I've been hit by guys first day of spring training, first day of live pitching. A guy will square you up in the ribs and, you know, it doesn't feel very well first day. So things like that, it's just, you know, getting the feet wet, you're seeing pitches. And again, these guys know how to do this. These guys have been here. They've been through spring trainings before. They've been in winter ball. They've seen guys throwing 100, because most winter ball places, these guys are throwing super hard, and they're ahead of the game. So it's just getting your feet wet, getting enough swings, getting that feeling, being able to go the other way, being able to go up the middle, doing the little things to get you ready for April.
Mr. Barker, as always, it was a pleasure talking to you. We will do this again real soon, and the season's it's getting close. It's
awesome.
Almost time.
I can't wait. I've already outside running in case John Gibbons calls and needs me to play left.
Well, I don't know, man. Just watch for those sprinkler heads.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thanks, man.
Kevin Barker of Baseball Central. Looking forward to working with Kevin this year again. We had a lot of fun last year. And for those of you who've asked on Twitter, yeah, it's coming back. No, I don't know when exactly it's starting. But it will be. Trust me. kid kind of got everybody's attention a couple of days ago. We talk about the number of, or the quality and the depth of basketball talent in this country now. Basketball talent, both in the NCAA, at the NCAA level and also, of course, the NBA level. It's gotten to the point now where we're starting to overlook people. It's funny. I was thinking about this today when I knew that Travis had got this kid to come on. We're starting to overlook people. Xavier Rattan-Mays, Florida State University, on Wednesday night scored 30 points in the final 4 minutes and 38 seconds of what would still turn out to be an 81-77 loss to Miami for the Florida State Seminoles. 4 minutes and 38 seconds, 30 points, 6 three-pointers, a pair of layups, and 8 free throws. To put that in perspective, and Rattan-Mays, by the way, was a teammate of Andrew Wiggins at Huntington Prep in West Virginia. To put that in perspective, only 2 college basketball players scored more points in a whole game Wednesday night than Rattan-Mays. He finished the game with a career high, tying 35 points. He said later that he scored 55 in a high school game one time. He said, the only thing I've seen like that was when I was watching the Golden State Warriors and Klay Thompson scored 37 points in one quarter. Rattan-Mays passed Bob Sura for the most points by a freshman in a single season, by Florida State University freshman in a single season. That's pretty remarkable for a kid that had to sit out all of last season due to academic issues. He's averaging 13.6 points. He's hit double figures in 14 of his last 17 games. He leads Florida State in assists at 4.4 per game and steals at 1.1 per game. That's a pretty good kid. And after his performance, it was interesting going on Twitter, and a lot of people who work for Rivals, the scouting service, a lot of people who have followed the Canadian program, all of them said, don't be surprised, saw this kid when I was looking at Wiggins. This kid's the real deal. He's a 6'4", 190-pound freshman from Scarborough, Ontario. Again, think about that. 30 points in the final 4 minutes and 38 seconds of a game. Xavier Rattan-Mays We'll join the Jeff Blair Show when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Rattan-Mays off the Ojo screen. Gets Reed in the air. Banks it in and draws the foul. XRM is filling it up.
And he's smiling about it.
XRM, pretty good nickname. Xavier Rattan-Mays, remember the name, from Scarborough, played at Huntington West Virginia Prep alongside Andrew Wiggins. Very highly rated by a bunch of scouting services coming out of high school. Rivals.com ranked him as the 28th overall prospect, and ESPN had him ranked as the 24th prospect. He's a 6'4", 190-pound freshman from, as I said, from Scarborough. And absolutely went off on Wednesday night for the Florida State Seminoles. The Seminoles lost 81-77 to Miami. But Rattan-Mays scored 30 points in the final 4 minutes and 38 seconds of the game. 6 three-pointers, a pair of layups, and 8 free throws. In the process, he passed Bob Surratt for the most points by a Florida State freshman in one season. He is also, and this is something considering the level of talent the ACC has seen, he is also the first freshman in ACC history to have 2 games of 35 points or more in a season. That is outrageous when you think of how good the basketball is in the ACC, that he is the first freshman to have 2 games of 35 plus points in a season. So far this year, Rahtan Mays is averaging 13.6 points. He's hit double figures in 14 of his last 17 games. And as I said, he was a very highly touted recruit coming out of Huntington, West Virginia Prep, where he played for or played alongside Andrew Wiggins. And yet another of the seemingly endless list of Canadian-born players lighting up the NCAA. Don't expect to see any Canadian player picked first overall this year. This has been the case recently, but don't let that make you think that the talent pipeline is drying up, because it isn't. And we're going to be joined by Xavier Rahtan Mays in a few minutes. Want to, while we have time, let you know what's coming up on Monday. Monday's a big day here. It's a big day because it is trade deadline day. And we at Sportsnet will have you covered all day long. Hockey Central's trade deadline day coverage will start at 8 a.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, sportsnet.ca, and Sportsnet Now. Radio coverage will be simulcast on Sportsnet 360 from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., and that'll come from the Hockey Central studio. And don't forget that, and our show, by the way, will be simulcast from 9 to 12. Don't forget also as well that Dean Blundell & Co., our new morning show, premieres at 5:30 a.m. on Monday. So it's going to be a big day. It's going to be a big day at the station, big day at Sportsnet on Monday. And we very much want you to be part of it. And as I said, hopefully the NHL general managers will save a couple of their trades for Monday. Otherwise, it's going to be an endless series of anecdotes from players and former coaches. So again, going back over this performance, think about this. 30 points in the final 4 minutes and 38 seconds of a game. 6 three-pointers, a pair of layups, and 8 free throws. That's pretty remarkable. That's more than remarkable. Only 2 college basketball players scored more points in a whole game Wednesday night than Xavier Rahtan Mays scored for Florida State, finishing with a career-high 35 points. And again, as I said earlier, the first freshman in ACC history to have 2 games in a year of 35 points or more. We're very pleased to be joined at this time in the Jeff Blair Show by Xavier Rahtan Mays. Xavier, thanks so much for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
First of all, congratulations on that performance. Just talk to me a bit about when you realized what was happening.
I really realized after it was about the 3rd three-pointer. One of our coaches, Coach Jones, drew up a play for me to come off a baseline, kind of pin down type thing. And when I caught it, I was so high. I was about 6-7 steps off the 3-point line, and about all the way up by the hash where my head coach, Coach Hamilton, was standing. And as soon as I caught it, I just turned and I shot it. And as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good. And I think that's when I really knew that I was in a different type of zone.
What's it like when something like that happens, and especially now in the modern world with Twitter and with the 24/7 news cycle? I mean, I was on Twitter that night. Twitter's exploding here. You know, all the networks are fighting themselves for coverage of the game. What was it like when that game was over? Did your cell phone or did your BlackBerry or iPhone, whatever it is, was it just lit up?
It definitely was. It definitely was. As soon as I got back to the locker room, I remember going back to my locker and it was on silent. But when your phone's on silent, you still see everything popping up on your phone. And my phone was just completely blown up. And I was really upset about the loss, and I didn't even want to look at it. I didn't even look at it till we got on the bus. I went and showered and stuff first. But my phone, it was nothing like I've ever seen on my phone before, I'll tell you that.
We're joined by Xavier Raton-Mays of Florida State University. You went to Huntington to prep school with Andrew Wiggins. You came out. You were a highly, highly regarded recruit. How have you found a kind of going about, you know, making your own mark in the game and sort of not being, oh, yeah, that's the kid that was Andrew Wiggins' teammate in high school? Do you still get a bit of that, or are you finding now that you're kind of carving out your own little niche?
I definitely still get a bit of that, but, you know, Andrew's my best friend, so I don't really mind it. I love being talked about with him, and we're so close that we really embraced that. But I think me coming here to Florida State has definitely allowed me to just show out a little bit and get out onto my own and have people realize who I am and the player that I am without Andrew. And I always think that's good. And I've been really fortunate to be put in the situation that I'm in with my coaching staff giving me the keys to this team, basically. And like I said, I'm just very fortunate. And but I love Andrew. I love mm-hmm. him. That's my brother. And but it's definitely cool to be talked about on your own.
How did you get into basketball when you're here? I know your father played at Florida State University and is considered one of the best scorers to ever play at Florida State, one of the best players to play at Florida State. How did you fall into basketball when you were in Scarborough?
It was just something that I always loved. One of my aunts put a basketball in my hand from when I was a newborn, and I remember as a little kid, we lived in these apartments, and I would go downstairs with my mom every single day, and I would just watch the older guys play basketball, and I would get angry at her because they wouldn't let me play, but because I knew no better, and I wasn't able to at that point. But it's just ever since I was young, I've always loved the game. It's always been hard on my mom to get me out of gyms because I always love staying and in and around basketball. So it started from a very young age.
Xavier, I know you got to scoot to class. I just want to ask you, though, what has Andrew said to you about your performance? Have you had a chance to talk to him?
Yeah, I talked to him. I talked to him a couple times, but he just said how proud of me that he was. And, you know, when your best friend tells you that, it means a lot. And he just said he's proud of me and keep doing what I'm doing. And if I keep doing what I'm doing, then I'll be on the next level with him in no time. And that means a lot coming from him. And just knowing that I have his support and my family support is definitely really special.
Xavier, I'm going to let you run. Thanks so much for doing this. We'll keep an eye on you. And again, congratulations. Continue to have fun and continue shooting the lights out, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
Take care. That's Xavier Raton-Mays. And squeezing us in between classes. And again, if you go on YouTube, man, you can find the footage of this. Some of the shots. The shots he was talking about are just outrageous. And it's like anything else, right? When you see a guy on a roll like that in basketball, and you start knowing, you just know that the stuff's going to fall. Doesn't matter whatever angle it's released from, doesn't matter where it's released from on the floor. You just know it's going to go in, and that pretty much sums up the type of game he had. By the way, if you want to follow him on Twitter, and he's got... he's a must follow. Trust me. His Twitter handle is at YoungBoyMays. It's YungBoi Mays, Kid Scarborough. This is his Twitter name. It's a must follow. It's interesting. After that game, Rob Fulford, who was his assistant coach at Huntington Prep, says last time YoungBoi Mays went off like that, I kicked him out of practice for trash talking. He didn't get kicked out last night, hashtag lessons. So again, yet another of the core of Canadian kids that are really making their mark in the NCAA. Golden State Warriors are in town tonight to play the Toronto Raptors after losing to the Cleveland Cavaliers last night. Of course, the Raptors 1-3 in their four-game road trip coming out of the All-Star break. Three consecutive losses in a row. Lots of issues with offensive efficiency. Lots of issues, although I would argue probably not as many as some people have made out to be. Issues with late-game defense on the part of the Raptors as well. Probably not the best team in the NBA to be playing when you're having some questions about your identity, about your efficiency, about your defense. The Golden State Warriors, nonetheless, they are the opposition tonight for the Raptors. Ray Ratto of CSN Bay Area joins us on the Jeff Blair Show to talk about the Golden State Warriors. Good morning, Mr. Ratto.
I presume you're starting to fire coaches and all?
No, we're
that, people?
No, that's just hockey. Okay. We only fire coaches in hockey.
Fair enough.
We have lots of patience in basketball.
That's a good team, so you probably should.
Yeah, they are. They are a lot of fun to watch. Actually, here's the thing about Golden State, and I don't know when exactly it started, Ray, but my sense is that 4 years ago, 5 years ago, people kind of started watching. They were a lot of fun. You know, obviously people love the way they play. They had a decent run in the playoffs 1 year. But when did the Golden State Warriors become the best team in the NBA or a team capable of being the best team in the NBA?
Probably after that 17-game winning streak, because I don't believe people thought they were going to be the best team until then. And once they started boat racing people, I think it got into people's heads that they could be. And even now there are a lot of people who are not convinced because, one, they are still essentially a jump-shooting team, and jump-shooting teams, by and large, don't win the title.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are more doubters now that Cleveland is sort of establishing itself as a worthy counterpoint to Atlanta in the East. Plus, you know, they're in the tougher conference, so there are at least three teams that you could look at and say, they're going to have a real hard time with them, no matter what their record is. So I think even now there are people who have hesitations about calling them the best team. But when you win 17 in a row and you've had the best record in the league for most of the year, a lot of people decide to conflate, boy, they're fun to watch with, boy, nobody can beat them. And mm-hmm. then you see what happens last night. You say, yes, they're vulnerable like other good teams are.
Ray, what are they – in terms of the Bay Area sports – picture, where do the Warriors fit in?
Behind the 49ers, and since the Giants have had so much success behind the Giants, but given where they're positioned now, they're a solid third,
mm-hmm.
Ahead of the A's, ahead of the particularly ahead of the Raiders now, since it looks like the Raiders are leaving. Certainly ahead of the Sharks and ahead of any of the college programs. So I'd say right now they've established themselves as a very solid third. I don't know that they'll be as big as the Giants, and I'm not convinced that they'll ever catch the 49ers, even in their current chaotic state.
The Steve Kerr's job since taking over this team, are you surprised at all at the way he's kind of been able to just hit the ground running with this team?
Well, look, he's one of those rare coaches who got to hit the ground running with a team that had already been largely built by the front office and his predecessor, Mark Jackson. The one thing that he has done, other than, you know, his usual communication skills, which is what you would expect of a guy who, you know, has been a broadcaster and a general manager and, has always sort of been comfortable in his own skin, is the fact that he tweaked the offense so that it wasn't so dependent on isolation and you know, sort of grinding down the pace. Now he's basically taken, you know, the reins off.
Mm-hmm.
They are still a superb defensive team, and that is probably the thing that gets overlooked here, is that Mark Jackson created a culture in which defense was going to matter, and it was going to matter a lot, and that has continued. But Kerr and his choice of assistants, Ron Adams, who is a great defensive mind, and Alvin Gentry, who's been a head coach in the past, sort of spoke to Kerr's understanding that he is a neophyte here,
mm-hmm.
and that he didn't try to reinvent the wheel for his own benefit. And I think that I think that resonated with his players, that you know, he was in for the result, not for the glory. And I think as a result, you know, they embraced him sooner than most teams would embrace first-time coaches. And beyond that, I mean, look, he's got an ego like everybody else, but he hasn't let it guide his decisions. And players understand that, too. I mean, they see that Stephen Curry is one of the faces of the entire league. They see that Klay Thompson is an impact player. Draymond Green is growing into his own. And you know, Andrew Bogut is Andrew Bogut, set in his ways, but a very good player when he can be healthy. And they don't have to sort of look at any drama in the front office. I mean, Kerr is clearly their guy. And it just it reduces one big agenda so that it makes it easier to go to work every day knowing that winning is the most important thing.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, they're kind of the model franchise, at least on the court. They're kind of the model franchise for the way the NBA is played now as well, aren't they? I mean, we look at that starting lineup and look at the guys off the bench. That's kind of the way the game's going. It's kind of the way other teams are trying to become.
Well, it's the way teams are trying to become, but their personnel allows them to do this.
Right.
I mean, if you want to go back to the beginning of when this turned, it's when Minnesota chose not to draft Stephen Curry in the year in which they were trying to pick every point guard in the draft.
Right.
Curry falls to 7. Don Nelson picks him, even though he doesn't have a need for a guard because he's got Monte Ellis. He sees something in Curry that tells him this guy is special. And then it's just incremental, you know, just big events that sort of turn everything. First, they trade Monte Ellis to get Bogut. They hire Jackson to change the culture in the room, which he did, and make them a better defensive team. They trade and pay a fairly high price to get Iguodala. They draft Klay Thompson, and they turn him from simply a jump shooter into a guy who's an above-average defender. It's been incremental, but I think the benefits that they've gotten are most clear when you look at Atlanta and San Antonio, two other teams that move the ball quickly. They believe in motion because Kerr definitely believes in that. He was, you know, he served under Greg Popovich, but they have the personnel to do the things that, you know, people like to watch right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a revolution happening in basketball because I don't know how many teams could assemble rosters like that, but they clearly are playing the kind of basketball that has always worked for Greg Popovich, is working in Atlanta. And I think that Masai Ujiri is trying to formulate in Toronto as well. It's the way you'd like to play if you had the players.
Right.
But you've got to have the players first.
Mr. Ratto, it's always a pleasure speaking to you, and I'll make sure that I pay you the beer that I owe you.
Oh, I trust me. And there will be interest accruing.
Oh, of course.
So by the
will.
Time we see each other, there'll be a clear alcoholic binge my way.
I'll probably owe you a brewery. Take care.
Seems fair.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Right.
It's Ray Ratto, CSN Bay Area. Follow him on Twitter, at Ratto, CSN. Again, the Golden State Warriors in town. The best show in hardwood. Golden State Warriors in town tonight to play the Toronto Raptors. A little bit of breaking news, by the way. The good news. Good news if you're a basketball fan. The Chicago Bulls have announced that Derrick Rose will be out 4 to 6 weeks after knee surgery. His return this season is expected. So initially it was thought that Derrick Rose would be out for the remainder of the season. Now, it's still going to make it hard for the Chicago Bulls. We're still going to get into the whole story of whether or not Tom Thibodeau can manage minutes. But there you go, according to the Chicago Bulls. Derrick Rose now out 4 to 6 weeks after knee surgery. His return is expected this season, and who knows? Michael Saunders hurts his meniscus yesterday. We're told he's out until the All-Star break. Who knows? Maybe he'll be back sooner. Again, very good news if you're a basketball fan, whether or not you like the Chicago Bulls. Very good news if you're a basketball fan. Derrick Rose now expected to be back this season. That's it for the Blair Show for this week. Don't forget, Monday will be part of Hockey Central's trade deadline coverage all day. TV coverage starts at 8 a.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet.ca, and Sportsnet Now. Radio coverage will be simulcast on Sportsnet 360 from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. from the Hockey Central studio. This show will be on from 9 to noon from the Hockey Central studio, and we'll have a cast of bazillions, and we'll keep you up to date on all the breaking rumors, all the breaking trades. And also don't forget, of course, Monday, 5:30, the premiere of Dean Blundell & Co. 5:30 to 9 right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hockey Central at noon is next. Lots of talk, I'm sure, about the David Clarkson for Nathan Horton deal that caught everybody off guard yesterday. Jaromir Jagr going to the Florida Panthers as well. Kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Oh, yeah, what about TJ Brennan? Lots of trades to recap. Lots of rumors to throw out there. Hockey Central at noon is next. You have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.